I know a lot of you hate Mondays. I love Mondays. The show does itself on a Monday. There is so much content. 2 great hours to start it, and we go into our third and final hour. I am Jim Rome in the Quicken Loans Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Milwaukee 1, Chicago nothing, top of the fourth. So the Brewers are up 1-0. That is a 163rd game. Dodgers rocks for the NL West. Also playing a little bit later on for the 163rd game. Quick recap of things going on. Tom Verducci coming up next segment. This email says, Rome, I had a harder time getting through 10 reps at the gym during that butthole montage than Rick has getting through 2 sentences of smack without a gasp for air. The end of that workout was ruined, but it was totally worth it. Eric in Smashville. Hope you heard that earlier.
Butthole.
Or if you didn't, you heard it right there. Dear Rome, my favorite part of Phil snap hooking his tee shot and forfeiting before it even hit the water was him not even bothering to take his glove off before he shook hands with Molinari. As for Tiger, he's always been terrible in the Ryder Cup. He's too selfish to be a good team player. I'll own that. Unwar Sergio Garbicea. Tyler in Edmonton, CEO, Tiger Honk Nation. Yeah, I'd give you credit for owning it, Ty, but what are you going to do? Your guy's terrible in Ryder Cup play. Always has been. Doesn't matter where it is. Doesn't matter who they put him with. Doesn't matter who he's up against. Explain to me how the alleged greatest player ever can be the alleged worst Ryder Cup player we've ever had. It makes no sense. Like, I don't even understand that. Literally. I'm not being hypothetical with this. I'm not being rhetorical with this. Somebody explain that to me. How can the alleged greatest player ever be one of our worst Ryder Cup players ever? And if he's not, Hefty is. Hey, Jim, I went head-to-head against Tiger, and I came out victorious. Yours, male pattern baldness. Drew in West LA. I mean, Drew, it's just lame. Why are you cracking on people who have something happen to them that's out of their control? Believe me, if that guy could fix that, he would. He's tried, I'm sure. You could take a run. Here's where I come out on this. You could take a run at Tiger Woods for so many different things, and I have. But his, quote, male pattern baldness is not one of those things, which is why I never have done that to him. Why? It's not his fault. All those other things that I've cracked him for over the years have been his fault. I've never cracked him for that because it's not his fault.
Happens to us all.
Not everybody, but happens to a lot of people. Come on, Drew. Hey, Drew, do better. You're better than that, Drew. You're better than that. At least I thought you were. Do better. All right, so as long as we're talking about the Ryder Cup, I want to reset that, and I do want to talk about Earl Thomas. So I got a quick question. Who had a worse weekend, the U.S. Ryder Cup team or the Seattle Seahawks? On the surface, it would seem like a no-brainer. The Americans, the alleged greatest team ever assembled, got their asses kicked in France. And the Seahawks beat the Cardinals in the desert. So that would seem like an easy question. It would seem like a no-brainer. But here's where it changes. Because deep down, even though they look better on paper, deep down, you had to know the Americans were going to get worked in Europe because that's always what happens. And if you thought otherwise, you're lying to yourself. You should have seen this coming on Friday morning because after they jumped out to that 3-1 lead in the first session, they promptly puked all over themselves. The Americans always lose over there, just like Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson always no-show once they get there. And how fitting was it that it ended with Hefty finding the water and conceding the match and the cup? Most predictable thing ever. There's no way that could have gone any other way than with Hefty doing what he did. However, what happened with the Seahawks was not the most predictable thing ever. Because while they won that game, they lost Earl Thomas, most likely for the season, with a broken leg in the third quarter. Now, the truth is, they lost Earl Thomas a long time ago. They lost him when contract talks went nowhere. That's when they lost Earl Thomas. It only became official yesterday. And what really, really became official was how Thomas really feels about that team. Because as he was being carted off the field, he pretty much apparently gave the middle finger to the Seahawks sideline. Now, when I talked to former NFLer Steve Smith earlier today, he's now a member of the NFL Network. He also appears on Inside the NFL on Showtime. When I said to Steve Smith that Earl Thomas apparently lobbed them the bird, he quickly corrected me.
Well, let me ask you, when has the last time you've seen a franchise, high-paid, Pro Bowl player get injured? They have to put an air cast on his leg. Who stayed on the sideline, though? See, the headline said he's flipping off the sideline. When has a player been injured and you have not seen the head coach come out on the field and look to see how his player is doing? The Arizona Cardinals patted him on the back. Larry Fitzgerald came off the sideline. Everybody came on the off the sideline except an important person for the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll. He wasn't flipping off the sideline. He was flipping a bird to Pete Carroll. And hence why Pete Carroll, right after the game is over, in the win, he says, we're putting him on IR. It's a severe injury. When has broken legs been that severe where you have a prognosis of he is immediately no longer available for the remainder of the season? So that just lets you know the dysfunction of that organization.
All right, so that's my key takeaway here. The dysfunction of that organization. No sooner than Steve Smith said that, a number of you pointed out, hey, look, man, the coach did come on the field. Pete Carroll did come on the field. Fair enough. However, Earl Thomas did flip off that sideline. And I guarantee he was not flipping off his teammates. We know that. That was directed at the head coach. That was directed at the organization. Have you ever seen an injured player flip off his own coaching staff and front office coming off the field? I haven't. That was definitely a first. Thomas was not available to the media after that game, so he did not explain the gesture. But unless I have no idea, unless I'm really, really wrong, I don't need an explanation. What that was a literal bleep you to the Seahawks, and not the players, but to the organization, the coach and the organization. So Earl Thomas holds out. He then comes in, he plays well, and then he gets hurt. Bobby Wagner said afterwards, quote, I think that's the crazy part of our business. If he doesn't come in, then he's not a team player. If he does come and he gets hurt, then he shouldn't have come. So it's a position that we get put in often, and it's an unfortunate situation. Right. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because as Earl Thomas and Le'Veon Bell and pretty much every NFL player will tell you, there are two things guaranteed in the NFL. Two things guaranteed in the NFL. Injuries and non-guaranteed contracts. And he's got the former. And it sucks. And he's pissed. And I get it. So what about Pete Carroll, the guy he flipped off? What about Pete Carroll? Couldn't wait to find out what Pete had to say. And remember, Pete Carroll, right? They love this guy. It was not that long ago that the Seahawks had the best culture in the NFL. I am dying to know what Pete Carroll thought about his star player flipping him off from a cart with an air cast as he was being wheeled out of the stadium.
I don't know. Somebody said something. I don't know anything about that. I don't know. It's a big stadium. You know, could be. I don't know where it was aimed at. Earl was extraordinarily poised on the field for what just occurred, to be so clear and so, resolved to what he knew what happened. But he was so poised and given back to the players and all of us. So I don't know what happened after that.
This guy's talking out his backside. That's incredible. It's like, he's poised on the field. It's a big stadium. What the hell are you talking about, Pete? Your star player is flipping you off. Flipping off the sideline, but flipping you off. And you're going on about the size of the stadium? About how he showed tremendous poise on the field, considering what was going on? And about giving back to the players? What the hell is the matter with you, Pete? No, serious, Peter. What the hell are you talking about? Even for you, bumping your gums in a rapid fashion, chewing your gum ferociously, and making no sense. That literally made no sense. Even for Pete, that made no sense at all.
I don't know something about that. I don't know. Speak to him. You know, I don't know that. Rose was extraordinarily poised on the field. The match just occurred to be so clear and so, you know, resulted to what he knew what happened. But he was so poised, and, you know, giving back to the players and all this. So I don't know what happened after that.
It's like the more controversial the topic, the faster he talks, the less sense he makes. Hey, listen. Don't get it twisted. Pete Carroll, look at me. Pete Carroll is a very good coach. Pete Carroll arguably is one of the best coaches. You don't have that kind of success that he has had in turning around USC and Seattle without being damn good at your job. Pete Carroll is a very good coach, but that is a very whack answer, even for a guy as weird as Peter. And further illustration of just how weird everything has gotten with the Seahawks. A few years back, they were the gold standard, not just in terms of talent, but in terms of how that team worked with talent. Now you've got a star player, one of the best they've ever had, one of the best to ever do it, flipping them off as he rides off on an injury cart. So not only do they not have one of their best players, they no longer have that chip as trade bait. Things have fallen so far for this team. The Seahawks still have some guys from those teams, but this Seahawks team is not like those teams. This team is just weird. It's weird, it's uncomfortable, and it's about as weird and awkward as sea bass wearing Seahawks gear. I still can't get my head wrapped around that one. But know this, even with a win, yesterday was the final nail in that coffin. The Legion of Boom is dead. And it happened on the same field where Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor were injured last season. Same field where Russell Wilson threw an interception in the Super Bowl a few years earlier. You know, the pick that took the Seahawks from a dynasty to a disaster. I have never seen one single play haunt a team the way that play has haunted this team. That field is now a house of horrors for the Seahawks. Injuries to Sherman, Chancellor, and Thomas. The worst play call in Super Bowl history. And now Thomas flipping the ultimate player's coach, the ultimate statement on the way off the field. Thomas didn't want to be there. Seattle didn't want to trade him. And now neither one is going to get what they want. I know why he's angry. Should have moved him. And now they don't have that chip. At Love Damn Birds tweets, Earl was just keeping up relations by communicating. Sincerely, Goose and Mav. International relations, right? Rome, a $2,500 answering machine. My answering machine cost me about $500 million. Signed, Eldrick Woods.
Hey, it's Tiger. I need you to do me a huge favor. Can you please take your name off your phone? My wife went through my phone and may be calling you. So if you can, please take your name off that.
Would that be big?
And just have it as a number.
Would that be big?
On the news channel. Just have it as your telephone number. That's it. Okay, you got to do this for me. Huge. Quickly. All right, bye.
Huge. Be huge. Huge. I'm sure my man, and he's like the cheapest guy ever, I'm sure he would have chipped me off $2,500 to make that go away.
Dude.
You should have seen me hauling that thing around. Yeah, hey, Mr. Prospect, I got a $2,500 answering machine for you. Would you like to hear about that? No, would you like to be thrown out in the street on your head? Yeah, I tried. I tried real hard. I lasted on that job 39 days. 39 days. And I remember walking in to quit. My boss was pretty happy with me. No, he wasn't. And the amazing thing is, my boss, the guy that I walked in and told at Harris Lanier that I was quitting, ended up running Tiger Woods Foundation. How weird is that? And for some reason, when I used to call, or we used to call over there to talk to him, he didn't want that call either. My man, Greg McLaughlin. Hey, Greg, come on, man. You know I sucked at sales. I even said it to him, like, dude, you're going to fire me soon anyway, so I'm just saving you the trouble. He didn't think that was funny either. When we come back, Tom Verducci joins us. Now, I got to tell you, I've been sleeping on my Casper mattress for quite some time. Easily and far and away, the best mattress I've ever had. It really does help me get the best night of sleep, period. Once you try Casper, you're going to love yours as much as I love mine. I love to sleep cool and comfortably every single night, and I'm able to do so thanks to the unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and alignment. Casper ships right to your front door in a small, how do they do that size box, and it ships for free. They'll even pick it up if you don't love it, and they'll refund you everything, from its engineering to its packaging to letting you try it for 100 nights. It is no wonder Casper has over 35,000 five-star reviews. Of all their products across Casper, Google, and Amazon, sleeping on a mattress is the very best way to try it. Put Casper to the test in your own home for 100 nights risk-free. Go to Casper.com, use the code ROME, and get $50 off. $50 towards the purchase of select mattresses. Casper.com, code ROME, get $50 off. Casper.com, terms and conditions do apply.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
For SI throughout the season, fans can visit MLB.com/postseason for the full postseason schedule. Lots to get to. Tom Verducci is my guest. Tom, good morning. How are you?
Great. Great time of year, Jim. Thanks for having me.
The best time of year, Tom. Great to have you back. The postseason begins tomorrow, but you have the first of two game 163s underway right now. So, Tom, if you're a manager in these games and you know that if you lose, you still have to play tomorrow, how do you go about approaching the game today?
Yeah, it's different. It's not all hands on deck. It's not win or go home, obviously. So you have to manage aggressively, but not at the cost of the next game if you happen to lose. So you have to manage this game with an eye on the next game. In other words, game sevens of a LCS or World Series, be prepared to see anybody out of the bullpen, including starting pitchers. Not really the case today. So it's a manager's game, though. These games still are a manager's game, especially the way bullpens are used today. But especially tricky today because you have to have something left in the tank if you happen to lose today.
And if we have the time, I want to talk to you about the bullpens and how they are used. But let me ask you about the Dodgers. They had been hot in September. They hit a bit of a lull, which coincided with the Rockies getting red hot. But then L.A. bounced back. They got a sweep of the Giants when they had to have it. So how do the Dodgers look to you right now?
Strong. I mean, their game is about just basically pounding opponents with the home run ball, right? They're a team built on slugging. That's the way that they win. They're a very deep team. You'll see their left-handed hitters tonight play a big role against the right-hander, Germán Márquez. He's much more effective against righties than lefties, but what I like about the Dodgers is they can match up both on the mound and at the plate, whatever they need in terms of right-handed or left-handed. So tonight the lefties will be a key. I still think, well, let's face it, we all know Justin Turner, right? He's the heart and soul of that team. I mean, he's an impact hitter. He's a clubhouse leader. He's a baseball savant, if you will, in terms of hitting. But I look at guys like Muncy and Peterson tonight as the ones who have to do the damage against the Rockies.
Tom Verducci joining us. All right, what about Milwaukee, Tom? At the start of the year, they were a 55-1 long shot to win the World Series. How do you explain the fact that they are where they are right now?
Well, Christian Yelich has got all Carl Yastrzemski on baseball this year.
Right.
You know, that unbelievable September where he slugged over 800, really is carrying this team, getting hot at the right time, undefeated in the last week. But I also like the fact that they've got the kind of modern bullpen that wins in today's game. They have a bunch of guys. I think they have five guys who strike out more than 10 per nine innings. Hmm. So Craig Counsell, I know he's got, let's say, average, maybe a slightly better than average starting pitching. And back in the day, you would say, well, there's no way that could be a playoff team. But not in today's game. Today, when you have so many relief pitchers and guys who keep the ball out of play, you can win that way. Remember, it was only like, what, 3 years ago where the Royals won the World Series and we get all excited about the three guys at the end of the Royals bullpen, right? Holland, Herrera, Davis. Now the Brewers got like six of those guys. That's how much the game has changed, and they're playing that game as well as anybody. Because Council is very aggressive with the way he uses those guys. When you have so many options, you can be aggressive.
Right, and so why would you not take advantage of that, and why would you not try to bullpen the other guy? So when you look at the combination of dominant bullpens like you lay out, and then you have all the advanced stats that managers have access to, how much has the challenge of being a major league hitter changed?
Oh, man. Just think about everything you have to prepare for a game. Yes, there's a ton of information, but you also have to be prepared to hit against about 8 or 9 different guys that you might see in the course of a game. It's rare you get consecutive at-bats against the same pitcher. You know, maybe you get your first two against the starter. After that, you know, you're seeing guys throwing upper 90s, wipeout sliders. Just the power in the game right now is just, it's crazy how much it's changed in the last 5 or 6 years. So there's a reason now the Major League batting average is the lowest it's ever been in the 47 years since we've had a DH. And I know people will complain that guys swinging up and you know, trying to lift the ball in the air and striking out too much, but you have to start with what's coming at them from the pitcher's mound. I don't think hitting's ever been more difficult than it is today, and you're going to see that throughout the postseason. You know, the Indians, the Astros, they're a little bit different. They're a little older school. They want to beat you with their starting pitchers. But otherwise, you're going to see a parade of relief pitchers. I think last year was, what, like 46-47% of the innings were picked up by relievers. We may actually push 50% this year.
Hmm. Right now, Tom Verducci, my guest. Right now, Tom, they're going to the sixth inning, and the Cubs and Brewers are tied at one apiece. And you literally wrote the book on the Cubs, the book titled The Cubs Way. When you look at this year's team and you compare it with the 2016 team, what do you see?
I see a flawed team right now. I see a team that, you know, based on some of the things that they were in their blueprint when the year started, Brandon Morrow closing, Yu Darvish in the rotation, Tyler Chatwood in the rotation, none of those things are in play. And you see what's happened to them. They lost a 5-game lead in September, partly because Milwaukee got red hot, but also because Morrow couldn't make it back from his injury. Pedro Strop gets hurt in a game where Joe Maddon had him taken at bat with the bases loaded rather than pinch hit for him. And recently, C.J. Edwards, who's really been a key for them in the last couple of years, is really not usable in key spots because he's lost his stuff and his confidence. So to me, there's definitely flaws in this team when it comes to their pitching, and especially how to win a game late. I mean, you mentioned it, 1-1 game right now. I have no idea. I'm not sure Joe Maddon has any idea how he's going to finish a game. There's not a formula now for the Cubs, at least a preferred formula, in how they get the last 9 to 12 outs of a game.
Tom, what about finishing the season? As an example, when they won the World Series in 2016, they snapped that streak and they ended the curse. If they don't win another World Series with this era of players, is that going to be a disappointment, or is just getting that one enough?
Well, listen, I don't want to say that's enough, like you can just rest on it, but it'll never be another one like that, of course, when you wait that long to win one. But I do think because they were so young when they won a couple of years ago that the expectation was that there's at least another one in the bank. So to me, it's analogous, Jim, to 1986 when the Mets won. You look at the ages of the team, of the players, the key players for the Mets when they won, they're pretty much all in their, just entering their prime, you know, mid to late 20s. That was similar to what the Cubs were a couple of years ago. And, of course, the Mets didn't win another one. They didn't even get back to another World Series. So you never know what can happen. So I think, yeah, this is a window that they should extend with at least another pennant. But, you know, especially getting through a couple of rounds now, the postseason is a lot harder. There's no guarantees of that.
Tom Verducci, MLB Network and Fox Sports analyst, also a senior writer for SI. Tom, before you go, let me ask you about the Red Sox. They finish up a 108-win season. What, in your mind, would be their biggest concern as they head into the postseason?
Well, two things for me, and it should be their strength. One is Chris Sale. You know, he was not throwing anywhere near the velocity he should be throwing in the last start that he had in the regular season. Of course, he missed a lot of time in September to rest the shoulder. Is he the same Chris Sale? I don't know. I don't think the Red Sox know that answer. And then in game two, it's David Price. You know, you're talking about a guy who started 9 postseason games, and he's 0-8 with a 5-something ERA in those starts. The minute he takes the ball in Fenway Park in game two, I think there's as much pressure on him as anybody in baseball in the postseason. And I say that because the game's at home. You know, he knows he doesn't have a lot in the bank of goodwill with Red Sox fans. He said it himself, how important it is to come through in the postseason, not just the regular season. So to me, I think those two games, listen, when you win 108, Jim, there's always pressure in a 5-game series to make sure you win those first two games at home, because you lose, especially the first game, the pressure really ratchets it up. You're supposed to win the series, and a 5-game series, you don't have a lot of room to recover. So, I think there's going to be some nervous feelings just starting out for a Red Sox team that's been so good all year long. On paper, they should be fine starting those two guys. But I'd be a little bit concerned about the way Sale is throwing and about Price's postseason resume.
Tom Verducci joining us. It's going to be fascinating, those first two games. Hey, Tom, quickly, I appreciate your time, but how about one more thought? If you take a step away from the postseason for a moment, yesterday may have been Bryce Harper's final game in a Nationals jersey. Do you think that Washington made a mistake in not dealing him before the deadline?
I do. I said that at the time. I thought they were overrating their team. The hardest thing to do, especially now with a second wild card, is to look yourself in the mirror as a team, as a general manager, and say, we're not good enough to make the postseason. You know, let's cash in this chip and see what we can get to make sure we're back there next year. They hung on essentially for another week and a half, Jim, because then they did start shedding some parts there in terms of Murphy and a couple of their relief pitchers. I thought they've been a 500 team throughout the season. I didn't like the culture there. I didn't see things changing. They decided to kind of stick it out as long as they could. I think they held on to him too long. They also think, Jim, that helps them re-sign him. I'm not sure I believe that, because you can book it right now. The team that signs Bryce Harper is going to be the team that offers him the most money, period. And it's going to be a lot of money. So I don't think trading him would have changed that scenario.
I agree with you, period. Whoever offers him the most money is going to get him. The MLB postseason begins tomorrow, and Tom Verducci is going to be a part of MLB Network and Fox Sports' postseason coverage. And remember, you can read Tom's work for SI throughout the postseason. Tom, great to have you on. Thank you so much. Very well done, as always.
Hey, man, always enjoy it. Thanks for having me.
You too, Tom. Great job. Tom Verducci, good info there. What he said about the Red Sox, I think, is fair and accurate. What he said about Bryce Harper is just accurate. Come on. Oh, hey, Bryce, we didn't trade you. Can you stay here for a hometown discount? No. Of course he's going to go where they offer him the most money. And I agree with Tom Verducci. Should have moved him. Why? Because they weren't going to factor into the postseason. We knew this. They should have known that. All right, we will come back. One last segment, and it's open. Exactly what do you want to cover? I'm not done yet. I've got more things to get to myself, but I will open it up to you. It's been a good day. Man, today's gone fast. Also, do not forget, right after this show, we tape our newest podcast, the RPO, Rome Price Opinion, starring Trevor Price, 14-year NFL vet, two-time Super Bowl champ. He will pick tonight's game against the spread. He will pick the Thursday game against the spread. We will both have our waiver wire pickups. And we're going to break down the weekend that just happened. It's a brand-new podcast. It's great. Very edgy, if not profane. But listen, what it comes down to is this. You have a lot of choices. Albie, hold up. You have a lot of choices of where to spend your time, what kind of content you want to consume. You want to find the best takes. You're going to get the best NFL takes on that program. Trevor Price comes with lava. The guy's got amazing stories. He is not afraid. Make sure you check out the RPO, EP4, after this show, a little bit later on. Thank you, Albie. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. And now, sports update. But thanks to Tom Verducci. We always talk about this. Tom Verducci is like a rock star to other journos. Like, other journos that I really, really respect fawn over Verducci. You know what I mean? Like, some guys are like the best of the best at their job all kind of look up to this guy. He's that good. So my thanks to him. ATP brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. ATP stands for Ask the Pros. And remember, you want to think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Let's see. ATP. Here it is. Robin Salt Lake. Salt Lake City asks, I know part of your gig is watching a lot of sports, but what's your favorite TV show to watch, new or reruns, if it's not sports? And then he adds, does Janet ever make you watch anything with her that you can't stand? War Cheers reruns, Unwar Chip and JoJo, and Building Houses in Waco, Texas. You could have pretty much just stopped at Unwar Chip and JoJo, and it would have worked. But If you want me to finish that thought, unward Chip and JoJo building houses in Waco, Texas. Hey, if those two really want to make a difference and they act like they do, what they should do is take a bulldozer and then ram it right into the athletic department at Baylor. Just knock that thing to the ground. Put it in the ground. And then start over and rebuild that. Chipper, JoJo, if you really want to make a difference and give back, do that. You're already there. Take down the athletic department, put it in the ground, and rebuild that thing. As far as, does Janet ever make you watch anything with her that you can't stand? And what's your favorite TV show to watch? You know, it's kind of an interesting answer, and I think we've kind of covered this already, but really quickly, she does not make me watch anything. She does not make me watch anything, but I will tell you the one thing that she has on frequently, that when I do walk into the room or the bathroom, I have to deal with it. I see it. I hear it. See, Janet and I are different. When Janet gets ready, it takes her more time than it takes me to get ready. You know, a lot of you guys understand this, right? It's not their fault. It's nobody's fault. It just takes them longer to get ready. The ladies in our lives, it takes them longer to get ready. You know, my lettuce is kind of low maintenance, man. Wash and go. Her lettuce, she likes to spend a little more time on. Doesn't need to, by the way, if you ask me, but will. The other difference between she and I, she likes background noise. She likes something on. I don't. I don't want to hear it. So, she needs background noise. She has Hallmark up all the time. Hallmark, the Hallmark channel. Why does she have the Hallmark channel? Because those movies are happy movies. And it's light and it's fun. So she has all those like Christmas movies that air like in May or in the middle of summer. All those love stories with all those same faded actors who are no longer good enough to be on real networks. And the same storylines. And she just loves it. Loves it. So she doesn't make me watch it with her. But if there's not a game on, if there's a game on, I always win that battle. She's great like that. If there's a game on, and luckily there's almost always a game on, I'm like, honey, it's business. Okay, go ahead, change channel. And she likes sports. But on those off chances where there is no game, she has that on, and I'm subjected to it. There are a couple of parts of that network that do not bother me. One, my gal, Holly Robinson-Pete. You know I'm all about HRP and Rodney. But most of all, when you're asking me my favorite show, if I have a, I don't have like, I don't have a big Showtime show, Netflix, although I am much more partial now. I'm much more partial now to American Vandal Season 2 on Netflix. I will watch that. But if I'm looking just to kind of pass out, fade out, go to bed, stop my brain from spinning, you know, I've told you this. I'm all about Frasier. I think Kelsey Grammer is the best sitcom actor ever. Somebody's got to work that back to him. Kelsey. Broham. Mind if I call you Broham, Kelsey? Chief. Dude, do our podcast. I could not like or respect you anymore. I think you're brilliant, bro. So the irony is, Janet will subject me to the one thing that I don't want, those Hallmark love stories, but Frasier's on Hallmark. There you go. Way too much time on that. Hey, there's Meredith Baxter Burney again. There's that dude, what's his face, from Melrose Place again. They're all there. They all end up there, by the way. They all end up there. They all end up there. Anybody who was somebody at one point is going to end up there. And then a bunch of people I've never heard of that just look good. And it's always the same thing. You know, the guy, the gal, oh, they hate each other's guts. Oh, you're in my space. Oh, you're the next door neighbor I don't like. Oh, he drives me crazy. Well, what do you know? They're getting after it. Now they're hitting it. No way. Now they're wrestling. Let's see what else we have here. Hey, Rome, Earl needs to suck it up. Get on the field with that broken leg. Signed, Greg Jennings.
Dog, I gotta do this. I put a team in my back, though. My leg broke. I don't know how the I'm running right now, though. I'll do this for Madden. I put the team on my back, dude. F*** it. You can't stop me. Cross the plane. Touchdown. Greg Jennings.
So good. It was so good. Greg Jennings came on. He came on and he talked about put the team on my back guy.
It honestly is probably the highlight of my career. Literally one of the highlights of my career, because when I run into someone, one of the first things they ask is, man, have you ever seen that video? Man, I'm thinking, like, who hasn't seen the video?
Is it true that Falcons DB, Thomas Dekue, used to reference that when you guys played Atlanta,
oh,
and he constantly be saying, Greg Jennings, put the team on your back. Was he really doing that?
We're playing them in the playoff game, and he literally is, put the team on his back, though. Greg Jennings. Every time I get tackled, and he's literally helping me up saying, Greg Jennings. I mean, I couldn't even focus.
All right, first of all, Aaron in Omaha, great email. So many times I make a point of saying, hey, clone, terrible email. Aaron in Omaha, amazing email, because that set up, that's just a great reset. Greg Jennings, that of all things he's known for, it's that Madden recap.
I put the team on my back, dude.
Dekue doing it, though, in the middle of a game, and every time they pick him up saying that, Greg Jennings.
Touchdown, Greg Jennings.
So good. What a great reset. Aaron, nice job. Way to make the show better, Aaron. Dear Jim, being a NoCal native, I have survived my fair share of Giants-Dodgers games at Candlestick Park. We as Giants fans do not hate the Dodgers as a team. We despise their fans. Many, many times I have seen orange and blue drunken fights in the bleachers, resulting in Dodger fans being escorted out in handcuffs. I understand they have something to prove. They need a new stadium. The Dodger dogs taste like hot cat food. And they steal our water. Congrats to the Dodgers for moving on. My Giants had no business trying to play spoiler with a Little League club. Please, Dodger fans, welcome to AT&T Park. Try to stay sober and out of handcuffs. Will in NoCal. That's rich. That's rich. Like, it's all Dodger fans' fault. Like, you Giant fans, you battery chuckers by the bay, never started a fight, never threw the first punch. You threw batteries at the opposition. That battery chucker gloss from way back in the day, yeah, maybe not fresh anymore, but there's a reason why you had it. You threw D-cells at opposing players. So don't tell me you didn't hate the players and you only hated the fans. If you only hated the fans and not the players, you'd throw batteries at the fans. You threw batteries at the players. Fact. You imagine bringing a flashlight to a baseball game to empty it out to throw at the players? Pete in Kalamazoo tweets, I hear you were talking Seahawks. Did they win again? Yours, Seahawks fans. Johnny Scabs, Jimmy. Ever watch a movie about a mother-daughter routine? Signed, Jason Stewart.
Take three. Alvin, roll tape. Wait for Gina. Action.
Excuse me, I'm looking for Debbie.
She your friend?
She's my daughter.
You want to do a mother-daughter routine? Name your price.
If you could just show me where she is, please.
You want to do something amazing? Gina Gershon. Gina freaking Gershon did that scene with Jay Stu. Stabil, America's number one fuel stabilizer.